What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Breathe that air, your eyes will stare into the distant line that's gone between the earth and the sky. It's when you fly the waves that break apart the clouds. You'll surely know, both fast and slow, you're free to ride the waves and turn up to. The sky is so blue on clouds, you drift away.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Ohio Mysteries. You're listening to Follow Dreams and Shooting Stars, an original song by Andrew McManus, a native of Northern Ireland, now living in Cleveland. Andrew is our featured Ohio musical artist this week, so stick around to the end of the podcast. We can tell you a little bit more about him and let you hear the entire song. But right now, stoke that campfire. We've got a new Ohio mystery to share. I'm your co-host, Steve Yoder. And with me is our researcher and storyteller, Paula Schleiss, whose journalism career included some 30 years at the Akron Beacon Journal.
Hi, everyone. I tell you, Steve, this year has been a true crime landmark year in Ohio. In the last few months, advances in DNA technology has identified at least three serial killers responsible for dozens of unsolved murders that stretch back decades. Samuel Little, a Lorain native, has confessed to strangling more than 90 women since the 1970s. Sam Legg, a truck driver from Medina County, was arrested this year for a 1997 rape, but authorities said DNA has tied him to at least four slayings. As of right now, he's been deemed incompetent to stand trial. And Gus Seferis, an Akron native who last year was found not guilty in a Licking County murder, is facing charges in two more murders from the 1970s. Today, I want to tell you about Gus Seferis, a story beyond shocking, because he was identified time and again over 50 years in a series of rapes, torture, and murder, but the justice system just would not hold on to him. Gustav Seferis is 75 years old, and he's sitting in jail under a $5 million bond. He was arrested in September after authorities announced they have new evidence connecting him to the 1970 murder of Karen Benson Akron and the 1975 murder of Loretta Jean Davis of Brimfield Township in Portage County. Akron Beacon Journal reporters Amanda Garrett and Stephanie Warsmith recently pieced together the story of Zafaris' life and found so many public warnings that should have ended his reign of terror before it ever truly got started. He was born in 1944, growing up in Akron's Goodyear Heights neighborhood, the oldest of two children. His parents operated Zafarius's restaurant at the corner of South Arlington and Waterloo Road, a 24-hour steak and eggs kind of place, frequented by factory workers, cops, and the graveyard shift. He went to East High School and then attended the University of Akron for a spell before entering the Army during the Vietnam War in 1965, serving his time with the 82nd Airborne Division. Then Zafaris returned to Akron, where he began his criminal career in May of 1969. His first known victim was a 20-year-old woman from Green Township, now the city of Green, that gone on a date. He got fresh, she said no, so he beat her up and attempted to rape her. Zafaris was permitted to plead down to a lesser charge in that case. He received probation for 2 years. A few months later, in April of 1970, police found a woman's body face down in Southeast Talmadge off Indian Hills Road, where the new Talmadge Woods allotment was being built. She had been stabbed several times in the chest and left discarded along a curb. She wore an Akron Central High School class ring with the engraved initials KLB, and that's how police figured out her identity. Her name was Karen Louise Bence. Karen was 18 years old, a pretty blonde, and the mother of a 3-year-old daughter. Her parents looked after the little girl while Karen worked 11-hour days between two jobs, waitressing at the Red Barn and clerking at Lawson's. Two businesses, by the way, that no longer exist. The night before she was found, she'd gone to visit her daughter and pick up a fresh uniform that her mom had washed and pressed. Then she left her parents' home and started walking back to her own apartment 4 blocks away. It was 11:15 p.m. She never made it home. She was found 6 miles away by a motorist who saw her body in the street. There were few clues in this case. Police saw tire marks where they believed someone had pulled over to dump her body. She was fully clothed, and the coroner determined she had not been sexually molested. But other clothes she had been carrying, including a uniform and penny loafers, were found half a mile away on East Avenue, as if they had been tossed from a moving car. This case grew cold fast. Meanwhile, Zafaris took a job in downtown Akron at a job training center in Cascade Plaza. Like most of his jobs, this one wouldn't last long. He soon married and moved to Huntington, West Virginia. And that's where he was in January of 1972 when a woman called police to report she'd been attacked. The 22-year-old said she was driving home at 3 a.m. when another car rear-ended her. When she got out of the car to exchange information, the man pulled a knife, forced her to the floor of his car, then drove her to another location. There, he raped and tortured her for 2 hours. Police tracked the car and found Zafaris. He was arrested, charged, and went to trial, but a jury deadlocked on the verdict. The judge declared a mistrial, and he was never retried. 2 years later, Zafaris' wife filed for divorce on the grounds of adultery, and Zafaris returned to Akron, taking a job as a car salesman. In May of 1975, Cuyahoga Falls police were called to Manor's Restaurant at Front Street and Hudson Drive, where a 20-year-old woman said she had just jumped out of Zafaris' Pontiac Le Mans after being raped. Zafaris told police they had been seeing each other and just had a lover's quarrel. But the woman said they had just met that day when he pulled up to her in his car. He took her to a gravel pit on Home Avenue in Akron, choked her into unconsciousness, and when she woke up, she found him making small cuts to her stomach with a knife. Oh. For reasons that aren't explained in any public record, Zafaris was not even charged in that case. That left him free 4 months later, in September of 1975, when another body was left on a local street. Loretta Jean Davis was 21 years old and lived with her parents on Old Forge Road in Brimfield Township. She was tall, nearly 6 feet, with soft mint green eyes and light brown hair cut in a shag. She liked to dance, had trophies for baton twirling, entered her quarter horse Patty in show competitions, and loved to listen to blues and rock and roll. She worked for her mom, who had a data processing business, and talked of wanting to study business at Kent State. Friends and family knew her to be easygoing but impulsive, someone who often did things on the spur of the moment, so it didn't seem all that out of place when she returned home from a Friday night date just after midnight and decided to head back out again to get something to eat. She left a note for her parents that she'd be back shortly, though she didn't specify where she was going. Loretta didn't return. She was found the next day on Congress Lake Road in Suffield Township by a woman who had stepped out of her house to retrieve her Sunday newspaper. She had been stabbed twice in the chest. Police found her green and white Plymouth Duster parked several miles away in front of a Talmadge Auto Parts store on Southeast Avenue. They said someone had seen Loretta sitting in that parking lot at 2:30 in the morning, but in a 1975 silver-colored Chrysler Cordoba. In a story this year by the Record Courier in Kent, one of the Portage County Sheriff investigators in that case revealed that Safaris was identified as a person of interest. Retired Detective Lieutenant Ron Snyder said, at the morgue, a tiny particle was found on her clothing that pointed to the restaurant that Safaris' parents owned, and given Safaris' record, made him suspect. It has not been revealed what the evidence was, but Snyder said at the time, it just wasn't strong enough to grab Safaris. He said Loretta Davis's family was pressuring the Portage Sheriff to bring someone in, and Sheriff J.D. Wilkins was facing an election in 1976 and desperately wanted to solve the case. He pressured detectives to make an arrest, but they ultimately prevailed, convincing him they didn't have enough to take the case to trial. And so, Safaris remained free. By now, he was managing his parents' restaurant. A few months later, he struck again. In September of 1976, he met a 28-year-old Cuyahoga Falls woman at the Dry Dock restaurant in Fairlawn, and the two talked several times over the next couple of weeks. One night in October, Safaris called the woman and asked if he could visit her at her Portage Trail apartment. She said no, but Safaris showed up anyway. She let him inside, but after 20 minutes asked him to leave so she could go to bed. Not one to take no for an answer, Safaris grabbed her by the neck, pulled a steak knife out, raped her, then lingered in her apartment smoking cigarettes, talking about how he'd like to see her again. Then he left. Jeez. In investigating that case, police learned of another attack. A woman who was 9 months pregnant had filed a report saying Safaris had raped her. Anyway, Safaris did stand trial in the rape of that Cuyahoga Falls woman, and he was found guilty. The judge sentenced him to 15 to 60 years in prison. He served 13.
You gotta be kidding me.
In 1990, the parole board let him go. By now, Safaris' parents' restaurant was closed, and his sister had moved to Columbus, and that's where Safaris settled when he was released from prison. The year after he was paroled, on August 12, 1991, the body of Benita Parker was discovered by a motorist traveling on a rural road in Licking County. The 21-year-old woman lived in Columbus and was a sex worker. She had been stabbed a single time, in the heart, then apparently driven to Licking County, pushed from a car, and left on the road. There was no identification on her, but her family recognized a photo of her that was broadcast on a Columbus television station. Just 18 days later, while police are still investigating the Benita Parker murder, they get a call from neighbors reporting that a naked and bloody woman outside their home is screaming, and a naked and bloody man is tussling with her and trying to force her back inside his home. Police responded to the call, which led them to the home of Safaris' sister in the Columbus suburb of Genoa Township. She and her husband were away on vacation, and Safaris was staying at their house. The woman neighbors heard screaming was bleeding from stab wounds to her breast, arms, and back. She would need a transfusion to save her life. She told police she met Safaris the night before when he stopped her on the street near the Ohio State University and asked if she wanted a party. She got into his car and dozed off as he drove. And when she woke, she was at the Genoa Township home where he raped and strangled her. Police said they tried repeatedly to talk to the woman, but she wouldn't cooperate, so they didn't bother to seek any charges against Zafaris. Still, the incident was enough to warrant revoking Zafaris' parole, and he went back to prison. And that's where he was until September 2000, when he was released again, far short of the sentence of up to 60 years he had originally been given. In the years that followed, he spent some time in Cincinnati and then in Stark County, where he worked at the Ponderosa Steakhouse. There, female employees would recall that he made them so uncomfortable, they would walk each other to their cars. And then, it seemed finally Zafaris' career might be over. In 2015, 24 years after the body of Benita Parker was found in Licking County, DNA technology had finally improved to the point that Zafaris could be tied to material taken from beneath Parker's fingernails, as well as on her pantyhose and underwear. Police wouldn't arrest Zafaris for another year or so, but finally he went to trial in 2018. It took the jury all of 45 minutes to set him free. Zafaris was returned to Stark County, and that's where he was a few months later when authorities announced they had evidence that now matched him to the 1970 murder of Karen Bentz and that 1975 murder of Loretta Jean Davis.
Let's hear tonight from our armchair detective.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
So tonight with us, we have Dolores Jariga from New Franklin. Hi, Dolores.
Hi.
Hey, would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I'm Dolores Jariga. I live in New Franklin with my husband. We're owners of Stewart Pest Control and Mosquito Control. And I'm on the board of directors for Barberton Area Community Ministries and also with the South Summit Chamber. And I also do some work for victim assistance, you know, interested in their human trafficking aspect of it. And my background has been in criminal justice field.
Well, thank you for your volunteer service.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
You know, we have you on here because you actually knew one of these victims.
Yes.
Loretta Jean Davis was a classmate of yours. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Loretta and what you remember?
Loretta went to Field High School in same school that I went to. She was 2 years behind my class. I was graduating in 71 and she was in 73. And in the mid to late 60s, we were part of a baton group corps out in Brimfield called the Twirlinettes. And of course, she also went by Jeannie. That's how we knew her too. I wasn't real close with her,
sure.
But just as far as the baton group, you know, we knew of each other, and the families, the parents would take us, you know, to different places that we were with our group and stuff. So, and her mom was very active with us. And
do you remember when this happened?
I was still living at home, and I remember hearing about it, and a friend of mine called, and she said, "Did you hear what happened to Jeannie?" And I says, I couldn't fathom, you know, that this was a girl in our area, you know, where we grew up at out Brimfield. And back then, Brimfield was mostly farm country. It's changed a lot through the years, but it was farm country, small town, everybody knew each other. And we were just shocked when that happened. Then, you know, I was listening to the case following, and then it just died. That was it. We didn't hear any more about it, and it was just not mentioned.
It did disappear very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times when I'm doing my research, there are anniversary stories, and, you know, unsolved homicides get revisited time and again, and this one did not.
No.
I was shocked how infrequently it came up in the media
right. After
it had happened.
Right.
You know, how did that affect you, you know, as a young woman, knowing somebody who also was a young woman, that that had happened to. Did it change you in any way? Did it change your behaviors?
At that time, I was pretty active with the victim assistance program. I was doing a lot of volunteer work, so I was aware of things that happened to people. But still, coming from my small hometown, it was shocking. And you just didn't hear of things like that back then. One of my best friends from high school, her family lived, Loretta grew up on Old Forge Road, which runs off of 43. And my best friend's family had lived right there on the corner of 43 and Old Forge. And they were a family that just never locked the doors and come in all hours of night. Her parents, after that, just everything changed. They locked the doors. You know, you just kind of were made aware of, wow, this could happen.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, that's all it takes, yeah.
Now, Dolores, I know you have a very interesting story about somebody else you knew that almost became Gus Seferis's victim. Yeah. Tell us about that.
This all came about, it was in April of this past year, there was four of us that got together and went, ironically, to a murder mystery. One of the girls that happened to be with us that night, he may have been the guy that abducted me that night, kidnapped me. So she went on to say she was at a gas station that was off of Route 43 in Uniontown.
And what year would this have been?
This would have been December of, 1974. And so she was at the gas station, and she said it was late at night. It was dark late at night. So she paid, went to get in her car, and this guy jumped in a car next to her and pulled the knife. So he told her to drive, and she said it was just a few miles away. They were in the North Canton area, and he had her pull into this farmhouse that was vacant at the time. And he took her through the back door, and she said she remembers walking through the living room, and then the kitchen was like a galley kitchen. And right there was a door, and you could see down, she looked like it appeared to be a root cellar. And he was leading her to that area, and she thought, oh my God, he gets me, he's going to murder me with this knife. And she said she just doesn't remember, it was like a blank, she just remembers just pushing him and running. And she still had the keys to her car because she was driving. And she ran and jumped in her car. She said she fishtailed out. She didn't know if he was behind her, if there was maybe another car in the background. She just took off in a panic. And she never reported it, nothing. She was always been fearful, you know, if she would report it, whether they'd retaliate. She didn't know. She seen this story and everything kind of matched up. So she went back and found this farmhouse that this happened to. She remembered the area and found the farmhouse and stuff. And she contacted Chief, or she sent a memo over to Chief Williams from Talmadge Police and gave him a little bit of the story, a little bit of her story. Well, he called her, and she gave him all the information. And he...
And that was just this year?
Yeah, right after, when all that story came out, she contacted him.
And she didn't have, she didn't think she could identify
him.
No,
she said it was dark. She really couldn't see him that well, because, you know, you're out in Uniontown. It's pretty remote out there, especially at that time. She remembers he had, his pants were like the houndstooth pants he was wearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, his knife, and he clasped it between his hands on, and then his knees, and that's way, you know, he would ride in the car, and he had dark, you know, it was just dark. So she said she's totally unable to identify him, but what she spoke to Chief Williams about was if they can research that farmhouse, could it belong to a family member, or why would he, you know, they've taken her there.
Right, obviously he was prepared to know that he could use that spot.
Yeah.
That is just so chilling.
Yeah.
Well, I did hear from another listener who said after he had been arrested, she told me that she had a 21-year-old daughter who was living in the apartment directly above him at one point, and that the neighbors had told her that that guy kept inquiring about her, which really disturbed her. I mean, she really fit his MO.
Yeah.
Another close call.
Yeah.
there are two mysteries here for me. One mystery is what other victims are out
there.
Exactly. Obviously, this guy was very prolific.
Right.
And the biggest mystery to me is, how was this guy in a position to keep doing this?
Exactly.
How did he not get put away and the key thrown out?
Well, I believe he was up for a rape charge. Was that in West Virginia or somewhere? And because of the woman's background, she had evidently some kind of a shady past and stuff. They used that against her in court, and the jury found him not guilty. And he walked.
I wonder if this is also in some way indicative of the way attacks against women were treated.
Yes.
In the 70s and the 80s and
yeah.
even the 90s. Like, it was not as big of a deal.
Right. And if you had anything, I worked a lot, example, for the rape victims of victim assistance. And I remember I went to see the prosecutor in Akron, and he wanted to know what was in her background. And that's just the way they were treated, you know.
And you know what? Many of his victims, they didn't have anything in their back. He, like you said,
right.
you know, he kidnapped that one woman from a gas station.
Yeah.
Loretta, she just went out to get a hamburger somewhere.
And she was a shy girl. She was a quiet girl. And from what I understand, she had a boyfriend. And, of course, he was interviewed and released. But she was a very quiet girl. Probably, you know, I mean, a naive girl. She grew up in Brimfield. She was just...
Right.
You know,
yeah, so it just seems to be, I don't know how to explain the lack of interest in just nailing this guy to the
right.
wall and keeping him somewhere. I mean, that one case where he was given up to 60 years, from
yeah.
15 to 60 years,
yeah.
he was let out before 15 years.
Right.
And then when he attacked another woman, they stuck him back in prison. And he was still decades short of 60 years.
Right.
How could a judge not be looking at that background and
exactly.
saying, this guy cannot be let loose? He's
right.
obviously a complete psychopath
yeah.
with no filter, no ability to stop himself.
Right.
I'm just amazed at how many victims there were. And we knew.
Right.
We knew.
Right.
We could track this guy.
And, you know, not for the DNA and stuff now, this still would have been an unsolved case. It's remarkable what they could find now. And, you know, so who knows? I mean, there could be many that they'll be able to relate back, you know, through the DNA.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're done hearing from this guy because
I
think there are more cases.
I do too.
And probably a lot of close calls.
Yes. I have to agree on that.
Well, Dolores, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate your insight, and wow, what an interesting story you added to this.
Yeah, so, okay, thank you.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Well, that's it for tonight, campers. For photos, clippings, links, and more. For this and every episode, visit our website, ohiomysteries.com. Now, how about a little more on our Ohio-featured musical artist, Paula?
Yes, Andrew McManus is a native of Northern Ireland who grew up influenced by local myths and legends of Irish literature. He once performed in pubs and coffee shops throughout that island, but now we've got him, and he's got a very dedicated following in Northeast Ohio. You can follow him on Facebook or check out his website, www.amcmanusmusic.com. Andrew is working on a new album, and we'll feature him again when he gets that done. In the meantime, here's a wonderful song from a previous album.
We played a clip of Follow Dreams and Shooting Stars at the top of the podcast. We're going to play the whole song for you now. So sit back, enjoy this Now Ohio talent, and we'll meet you back here next week for a new Ohio Mystery.
Stars, they'll lead you where you want to go, to search for gold. You'll just get old and never find a place that's still. Dive and sway, flow away, feel the water cold. The setting sun is telling tales. Each day, the story told. Breathe that air, your eyes will stare into the distant line that's gone between the earth and the sky. It's when you fly the waves that break apart the clouds. You'll surely know. Fast and slow, you're free to ride the waves and turn up to the sky so blue on clouds and drift away.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.